The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
I think it is anyway. you know, I told you last year was like Murphy's Law in a year. It's just continuing. Murphy's Law is continuing. Laffy, don't let me know in the chat because I can't get into the chat. I don't know if I'm on or not, and so I need somebody to tell me on Twitter if you can hear me, because AT&T is down. At least it is here in Florida. I know I'm plugging right along. I'm listening to the impeachment, and he's been impeached a second time. Yeah, and my internet went out, and so I wasted a good 20 minutes on the phone with AT&T before the brain surgeon on the other end of the phone said, oh, it looks like there's a network outage. It was the first question I asked the guy, but, you know, whatever. So here we are. Chat's not on the page. No audio. I know. No audio at all. Here. Hold on. I've got Laffy on the Twitter. Try going to Progressive voices.com and let me know if you hear anything, because I may not even have a show today. Because everything is dead. I am connected to the internet through my phone's mobile hotspot because I have T-Mobile. Thankfully, I don't have AT&T. I don't have AT&T as a cell phone provider, but I'm really kind of screwed. So I don't know if anyone can hear me. I'll tell you what, if someone can hear me, why don't you call me? Although I'm supposed to be calling, you know what? Let's try to call our guest. I don't know if he's there, but I guess we'll find out. So I'm going to try to call Aswin Subasang from the Daily Beast. And again, don't know if we're on the air or not, but I'll act as if we are. So we're calling Swin. Ah, okay. Now, maybe it's a little slow going
Hello.
Through. Hey, Swin, it's Nicole Sandler calling. How you doing? Can you hear me?
I'm doing great.
Oh, good.
Let's do this.
We're on the air, I think. Here's the problem. You know, my show is online, and my internet is down. So I am connected, I think, through my cell phone's mobile hotspot. But I'm waiting for clarification from somebody on Twitter to let me know if they're even hearing us, because I'm flying blind at the moment. But I'm recording. So if by some chance we're not live on the air, when we come back up, I can use this. So thanks for bearing with me today. You know, I said throughout 2020 that it was like Murphy's Law in a year. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. I've decided it's continued into 2021, except we now have an impeachment, a second impeachment. So Aswin Subasang, you're at the White House today. You're the pool reporter today.
Yes, indeed. And I'm here right now waiting at the end of the day to see what else will happen, if anything. It appears the president is sequestered away from us in the Oval Office right now. But the weird thing about this being a historic day here in Washington, D.C. and the country is that, look, Donald J. Trump just became the first president so far in American history to become a president who was impeached twice. And the impeachments happened within each other within roughly a year or so. And obviously, the historical weight of that shouldn't be lost on historians or future historians who are recording this. But at the same time, here at the White House today, elsewhere in the city and elsewhere in the country, and the political universe in the United States, there is sort of a weird hushed resignation to it. Like, people knew this was going to happen. Maybe they didn't expect as many Republicans as they ended up doing so, joining Democrats in the House. But for as quote-unquote historic a day it is, there's an almost surreal routine element that has just been grafted onto it, and everybody is just, okay, well, that happened, on to the next. We're going to see what is going to happen, if at all, with the Senate trial. There is only, if we round down from today, less than a week. There's 16 days left in the Trump era. After that, eyes will be on the House and the Senate, which will, of course, at that point be controlled by Democrats in the Biden era. Eyes will be on Biden's Department of Justice and to see what investigative powers or levers they will wield against Republicans involved, or at that point, former President Trump. So this is very much as big of an event as the second impeachment was today. It's nearly a, maybe not even first chapter in the upcoming book we're about to read in the saga, but just, I don't know, the first page, maybe page and a half.
Yeah. Swin, unfortunately, we've got a terrible connection, and I'm sure it's because of my phone challenges at the moment. I'm just wondering, you're there in the White House today. Are there any staffers milling about? Can you gauge the mood in the building?
There are staffers milling about, but it is a, compared to what it was just a few weeks ago, it's a skeleton compared to what used to be. Yes, there are staffers and senior staff here and there, popping up here and there. And it, there's just the fighting spirit that was with Trump and with his senior officials and staff just a year ago when there was the last impeachment process in the House and in the Senate, when they had the rapid response ready to go. All the lawyers and communicators and Donald Trump PR mavens were right at the helm, ready to pounce on everything they could. And right now, there's just a matter-of-fact quality to it, and there's a listlessness here at the White House where, especially since there's less than a week to go in the Donald Trump era in American presidential politics, at least for right now, there's a resignation to it. There isn't the energy or the fight that you would expect in a big moment like this, especially from someone like Donald Trump, who likes to brag, either baselessly or not, about how good of a quote-unquote fighter he is. This
right.
one is one he's very much he and his staff taking down with their backs on the mat.
Gotcha. Well, Swin, I'm going to touch base with you again either later in the week or next week, because this obviously is nothing's working right today. Thank you, though, for being there for us. I really appreciate it.
I apologize for that.
It's not your fault. It's AT&T figures, right? Thank you, AT&T. Aswin Subhasang.
Damn you, AT&T.
Yeah, damn you, AT&T. But I'll call again, I promise. Thank you so much for being there, though. We'll talk soon. Take care. My luck. The day that the president is impeached for the second time. And the thing is, I couldn't even play the audio because I was just collecting video clips, thinking I would just play them right off the video and, you know, we'd have a show. But because my bandwidth is so narrow, because I'm using the, you know, my mobile hotspot from my cell phone, it won't even play the video. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to give AT&T a few more minutes. But the bottom line is the House impeached Donald Trump. This time it was bipartisan. 10 Republicans voted with, I believe, all the Democrats, although I don't have the numbers in front of me. They are Liz Cheney of Wyoming, Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio, Jamie Herrera Boitler of Washington, John Katko of New York, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, Peter Major of Michigan, Dan Newhouse of Washington, Tom Rice of South Carolina, Fred Upton, that's a surprise, of Michigan, and David Valadeo of California. All right, while I'm going to try to figure things out on this end, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the extended version of today's What's News. At least that'll bring you up to this morning, so you'll be current, okay? All right. Take it away, Nicole.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's 1 week until Joe Biden's inauguration and Donald Trump's White House eviction. But it's also a day when history is being made, as Donald Trump becomes the first president in the nation's 244-year history to be impeached a second time. And it's looking as if he might be the first ever to also be convicted by the Senate. More on that in a moment. First, House Democrats on Tuesday pushed through a non-binding resolution calling on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment, declaring Trump unfit after his incitement of a mob that attacked the Capitol, and remove him from office. Pence notified Speaker Nancy Pelosi that he was rejecting the idea, thus setting up a Wednesday vote on impeachment. There's one article drafted by Representatives David Cicilline of Rhode Island, Ted Lieu of California, and Jamie Raskin of Maryland. They started writing it while in lockdown during Wednesday's siege, and it charges Trump with incitement of insurrection. Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government. He threatened the integrity of the democratic system, interfered with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiled a co-equal branch of government. He thereby betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Shortly after 9 Eastern time, Wednesday morning, the House began the debate. A vote is expected sometime late Wednesday afternoon. The first time Trump was impeached, only one Republican, now former Congressman Justin Amash, voted with the Democrats. This time, though, as many as a dozen Republicans are expected to step up. Congressman John Cotico of New York on Tuesday became the first Republican to announce he's a yes vote. That was followed by Adam Kinzinger, Fred Upton, and Jamie Herrera Butler, and then Liz Cheney. The number three Republican in the House issued this statement, quote, "The president of the United States summoned this mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack. Everything that followed was of his doing. None of this would have happened without the president. The president could have immediately and forcefully intervened to stop the violence. He did not. There has never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States of his office and his oath to the Constitution." Liz Cheney. The New York Times is reporting that House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, quote, "will not be whipping the vote." That's a biggie, not to mention the fact that McCarthy reportedly warned his members not to verbally attack colleagues who vote for impeachment because it could endanger their lives. Wow. So after the House votes to impeach, the Speaker then sends it to the Senate for the trial. The timing on that, though, is uncertain. Chuck Schumer is reported to be negotiating with Mitch McConnell about the scheduling of a trial. If McConnell agrees, they could reconvene the Senate immediately and hold a trial in advance of Biden's inauguration. If not, there will likely be a delay to allow Biden time to get his cabinet confirmed and start fixing the damage Trump has done to the country. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Biden's transition team said that career officials would be put in place at most cabinet departments and in some sub-cabinet agencies following his inauguration. The move will enable Biden to prevent any of Trump's political appointees from staying at the helm of cabinet agencies past January 20. But regarding the possibility of the Senate convicting Trump, the New York Times dropped a very big story Tuesday with a headline reading, "McConnell is said to be pleased about impeachment, believing it will be easier to purge Trump from the Republican Party." The tide seemed to be starting to turn. Well, it took 6 days, but there was finally a press briefing on Tuesday about the siege. For some reason, though, neither FBI Director Chris Wray nor Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen were there. Instead, the briefing was given by Acting U.S. Attorney in Washington Michael Sherwin and FBI official Stephen D'Antonio, who were the first to address the nation about the attacks. They said that they've opened more than 170 subject files and charged over 70 cases in their investigation into Wednesday's attacks. Sherwin said the scope of the crimes is, quote, mind-blowing and could include charges of sedition and conspiracy, serious crimes that could result in up to 20 years in prison. Others described rioters engaging in open-handed combat with police officers and confirmed that there were pipe bombs planted outside Republican and Democratic headquarters. And they told of new threats of terrorism also rolling in ahead of the inauguration, including a plot described by one member of Congress in which thousands of armed extremists would surround the Capitol and prevent Democrats from entering. This is like a really bad movie. Representative Mikey Sherrill of New Jersey said Tuesday night in a webcast that she saw some members of Congress leading people through the Capitol on the 5th of January in what she said was reconnaissance for the next day. She charged that some of her House colleagues had abetted Trump and the mob, saying, "I'm going to see they are held accountable." Well, those members she identified were Congressman Paul Gosar, Andy Biggs, and Mo Brooks. House Democrats introduced a pair of resolutions that would formally censure and potentially remove those members who were complicit. One resolution aims to condemn and censure Representative Mo Brooks, who took the stage at a rally Wednesday before the riot and said,
"Today is the day American patriots start taking down names and kicking ass."
We also finally heard from Donald Trump himself for the first time since Tuesday as he left the White House, headed for Alamo, Texas, and his wall, whatever. He, of course, defended himself against allegations that his remarks incited the mob that stormed the Capitol. And he said Democrats' calls to impeach him were a, quote, "continuation of the greatest witch hunt in the history of politics." Oh, please. And he claimed his remarks at that rally were totally appropriate. Really? Totally appropriate? In that speech at the rally on January 6th, Trump urged supporters to march on Congress, repeating his false claim of voter fraud and telling them, quote, "If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore." The hypocrite, speaking at Alamo, Texas, told his supporters not to be violent ahead of inauguration, saying, "Now is the time for our nation to heal, and it's time for peace and for calm." I have no words. In other news, the Supreme Court on Tuesday granted the Trump administration's request to reinstate longstanding restrictions for patients seeking the morning after pill. This was the first abortion-related case to come before new Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett, and it all but confirms abortion rights activists' fears that she will be a deciding conservative factor in such cases. The FDA restrictions require an in-person visit with a medical professional to pick up the medication, a measure that federal courts had blocked, citing pandemic concerns. Courts have been fighting over the medication abortion rule since last summer. In a surprise move, the Environmental Protection Agency on Wednesday will unveil a climate rule that will effectively prohibit the future regulation of greenhouse gases from any stationary industry other than power plants. This new Trump regulation could hamstring much of Biden's agenda, for example, by prohibiting Biden's EPA from setting carbon limits on oil and gas wells or refineries. Just lovely. There is some good news, though. Former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, his top aide Rich Baird, and former health director Nick Lyon have been told that they will face criminal charges resulting from Flint, Michigan's water crisis. Up to 10 individuals are set to be formally indicted as soon as Thursday. This story is a case of just desserts. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo abruptly canceled a European trip on Tuesday after European leaders said they would not meet with him. Seriously. Pompeo had been scheduled to first go to Luxembourg, but that country's foreign minister declined to meet with him. The second leg of the trip to the EU offices in Belgium remained on the schedule, but it was called off at the last minute after top EU officials also balked at meeting the now toothless, soon-to-be former Secretary of State. A diplomatic source told Reuters that U.S. allies were embarrassed by Pompeo after last week's siege at the Capitol by Trump's supporters. Pompeo has condemned the violence, which left five people dead, without addressing Trump's baseless election fraud claims at the center of the insurrection. And in the story that just won't end, at least 4,327 Americans lost their lives on Tuesday from COVID-19 as the nation suffered yet another single day high for coronavirus-related deaths. That raises the nation's overall death toll from the pandemic to at least 380,796 people. The death toll here has averaged more than 3,300 every day over the past week. That's a spike of more than 217% from the middle of November. The number of new cases being reported daily continues spiking, meaning that the astronomical daily death figures are likely to keep rising in the weeks to come. Tuesday was just the second time that the U.S. reported more than 4,000 virus-related deaths in a single day. But based on current hospitalizations, it certainly won't be the last. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Visit NicoleSandler.com for more, and please click on that donate button. All right. Well, okay, so here's the story. My internet is still down. I do understand that some people can hear me via NicoleSandlerStream.com. I don't know if we're on Progressive Voices or not. I know the signal is less than ideal. But Sandra, Amy, on Facebook tells me that you're hearing the news. So I guess you can still hear. So I'll tell you what, I'll hang for a little bit. I'll open the phone lines. We'll see if it works. 954-889-6410. Or you can Skype to Nicole Sandler. Again, don't know if it'll work or not, but I'll give it a shot. You know, I'll keep going if you're there. So we'll see. In the meantime, I can't even play audio. You know what? I think I can from some of it because I was rolling tape. Let's see. Or, you know, digital tape. Yes, and they're going to stay. The YouTube chat is going on. Okay, and they're listening to audio. Awesome. I can't see you guys because I can't really pull anything up. But I did flag a few of the floor speeches on this recording. The problem is I didn't keep track of who they were because I thought I would just play the audio through the video. I wish I remembered which number Cori Bush was because she was great. What I can do is go to a few of the marks that I made on the sound timeline and see what I flagged, because honestly I have no idea what I flagged. I know the first one I flagged, I think this one was Nancy Pelosi, and I believe this is when she opened debate on the actual impeachment bill, impeaching Donald Trump for the second time. And yes, he was impeached for a second time. So let's see if we can make this work. All right, let's see where we are.
We'll each control 1 hour.
Oh,
the chair
here we go.
Recognizes the gentleman from New York, Mr. Nadler.
And I'm sorry about the hiss, the noise.
Consent that all members may have 5 legislative days in which to revise and extend their remarks.
Okay.
And insert extraneous material on H.R.S. 224.
Without objection.
Madam Speaker, I yield 1 minute to the distinguished Speaker of the House, the gentlelady from California.
And of course, I couldn't have recorded this on the other machine that wouldn't have that buzz, but sorry.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Here we go. Pelosi.
Thank the gentleman for yielding and for his leadership. Madam Speaker, in his annual address to our
I'm sorry, that's kind of unlistenable. I'm sorry, that line is just too noisy. So I'm not going to do that. I will have highlights for you tomorrow. I'll tell you what I will do, though, if you're there. I'm going to read to you something terrifying. It is a first-person account that is... And if you want to call in, feel free, 954-889-6410 or Skype to Nicole Sandler, and I'll gladly take your call. But this is a first-person account of what it was like to be inside the House chamber when the violence and chaos began on Wednesday. It was a piece written, it's posted at NBCNews.com by a woman named Haley Talbot. And I'm just going to read it for you. As I go through it, you'll understand why I'm reading this for you. It's she posted this January 9th, a couple of days ago. And here it goes. She writes, "We always knew that Wednesday, January 6th was going to be wild Republicans in the House and Senate plan to object to the counting of the Electoral College vote, a process we anticipated would take more than 24 nonstop hours. I made the rounds to our various camera positions on the Hill and met up with Casey Hunt as she prepared for the NBC News Network special, the appearances on MSNBC and Nightly News, and the other zillion demands she would have that day. Minutes before the joint session convened, I told her I was heading over to the House side to prepare for pool duty inside the chamber. Next section is titled Pool Duty. And this is not about swimming. It's about there are a number of pool reporters and I guess producers who then share their stuff with everybody else because they can just fit so many reporters in each chamber, I guess, at a time. So she writes, when I walked into the chamber a few minutes before 2 p.m., I felt so prepared. Our team had all been reading in and studying the dynamics of the event for weeks, ever since we realized what a saga the largely procedural process was going to be. I started my pool note, intended to add color and context to everyone's reporting, and made up of moments that are not captured by C-SPAN's cameras. Typically, it's a combination of who was refusing to put on their mask. Oh, somebody's calling, so I will interrupt and see if we can even take this call. Hello?
Hi.
Hey, Sandy.
Hi.
Oh. are you guys...
Everybody.
So Sandy is in the YouTube chat room where I can't see
Environmental Coffee House. We have 51 people, and the diehards and Diane Russell and John and a lot of people are there chatting away. We love you.
Oh, thank you. So I just got a message from George, who runs operations at the Progressive Voices Network. Apparently, Randy Rhodes had the same issue because AT&T was going in and out all day.
Yep.
So he said, bail, we have dead air playing a repeat. So they're playing a repeat on Progressive Voices. But you know what? I'm recording this. I'll still put it out as the podcast for anybody who wants to listen. And I'm going to finish. Can you hear me okay? Or is it even worth doing?
I hear you because I'm on the phone with you.
Oh, but when you were...
I can hear you nicely on the computer.
Yeah.
I hear an echo, and I don't have anything, I don't have any audio up.
No, but you could hear through...
Everybody's saying we're cutting out.
Yeah. All right. You know what? I'm going to bail. This isn't worth it. Thank you. I'm so sorry. Again, I feel
everybody's listening. They can hear you.
They can hear? You can hear through the Nicole Sandler stream? Okay, we have a bad signal on the phone.
Nicole Sandler stream.com.
Okay.
We'll just hang up.
All right. So,
I love you.
All right. Oh, I love you too. Thank you so much. And everybody, check out Environmental Coffee House on YouTube. Thanks, Sandy. All right. So I can't take phone calls either because we just don't have enough bandwidth. So, knowing that, I'll finish reading this and, because it is fascinating. So, again, I'm reading to you from NBCNews.com. A producer who was in the House of Representatives when they sieged the Capitol, when they took over. Her name is Haley Talbot. So she's writing. She said, I started my pool note, intended to add color and context to everyone's reporting and made up of moments that are not captured by C-SPAN's cameras. Typically, it's a combination of who was refusing to put on their mask, who's participating in a standing ovation, which members are huddled in the back chatting, maybe even a quick reference to a member caught snoozing during the extended proceedings. Quote, hey, from a frigid House chamber, I'm your pooler for the 2 to 4 p.m. portion of the joint session, I started. I didn't get too much further when I began to sense something was off. There were murmurs from members on the floor as Arizona representatives who were objecting to the state's certified election win for President-elect Joe Biden continued with their speeches. I think we were all getting texts and tweets and tweet notifications about what was transpiring on the steps just outside the building. And yet, I felt so safe. I kept thinking I was in the safest place possible. I told my bureau chief, Ken Strickland, Ken, I am not the one you need to worry about. I said I was scared for my colleagues in the building's offices. Quote, I am the one in the chamber. This is the safest spot in D.C. I look back on a text I sent at this point to a concerned House staffer checking in on me. Are you staying safe? He asked. Wow, this is nuts. Yes, thank you. I'm in chamber as pooler, so feel very safe. I hope you aren't here, I replied, totally naive as to what was going on outside the building. He wrote, thank you. I am not, thank God. The session was interrupted and recessed for a few minutes. Representative Dan Phillips of Minnesota yelled, this is because of you, toward the Republican side of the chamber. The joint session resumed, but at this point, people were agitated and nervous. It was clear parts of the complex were not safe, and the mob outside was more threatening than the police had anticipated. These moments felt painfully long amid so much uncertainty. I was sure we would proceed with the floor debate and continue with the certification until an announcement was made that the rioters had breached the Capitol. I was texting our Capitol Hill coverage text chain every update, every small detail I noticed. I was focused on making sure our correspondents, Casey, Garrett Hake, and Leanne Campbell, knew exactly what was happening. I broke the rules by taking pictures and videos inside the chamber, but I needed to show my team what was ensuing in front of my eyes. Ken called several more times over the next 15 minutes to check as the situation all over the complex escalated. I remember being frustrated when his calls would break up and cut off the videos I was taking inside. I didn't yet understand the seriousness of the situation. The next section is titled, Tear Gas in the Rotunda. That quickly changed, she continues, when an announcement was made that there was tear gas in the rotunda. Quote, grab the gas masks under your seats and be ready to put them on. That's when the panic was really palpable. Everyone was shuffling, yelling. No one knew where to go or what to do. There wasn't a gas mask under my seat in the gallery. I remember scanning the seats around me, but couldn't locate the large black sack I'd seen other members furiously grab and rip open. I yelled to a nearby Capitol police officer. Nothing happened. I turned back toward the House floor, watching as members started fitting their masks on their heads. I continued to text the group what I saw. I yelled again for a gas mask, and the officer threw one down. Amidst the texting and answering calls, I didn't start putting it on until I saw everyone around me had filled their hoods with air and had their faces covered by the contraption. I was the only person on the television side of the gallery since I was the assigned TV pooler, and all of my colleagues working for print publications were nearby in their designated section. They started climbing over railings to get to where I was, and we all moved down to where the other members had already scurried under their chairs. We huddled as close as we could to one another. I kept thinking that even though we were all sheltering under our chairs, we weren't under any real threat. And then the glass shattered. A pane in the glass of the intricate doors to the speaker's lobby were smashed through by rioters as they tried to make it onto the House floor and attack the very center of democracy in America. I caught glimpses of the standoff below as officers barricaded the door and drew their guns to defend the dozens of people inside. I started to hear the quiet whispering of prayer. A congresswoman I often see but didn't recognize was holding the hands of other members as she crouched down and was praying over the group. I started to think about what I would use to defend our group if the mob were to smash through the third floor glass and enter the gallery. The congresswoman next to me had a cane. That's what I'd use. I thought about how I'd position myself to block as many people as possible. As I was filming with my phone in one hand and texting furiously with the other, I noticed a representative close to me had fallen uncomfortably. I reached down to pull her closer. The members around me were almost all women and some of the bravest people I've ever seen. No one panicked. We held hands. We told each other it was going to be okay. We were told the hallway was almost clear and we would be evacuating as soon as we could. Where are we going? Where are they taking us? A member asked me repeatedly. She continued. When we left the House chamber and walked onto the third floor landing, we passed by dozens of people laying face down, face first, on the ground with their hands behind their backs. Lawmakers asked police if they were protesters. They were. I'm interrupting here to say they weren't protesters. They were insurrectionists who were out for blood, who were breaking into the Capitol, trying to get on the House floor to, at best, take hostages, at worst, murder. All right, back to the firsthand account. She writes, members and reporters still had their gas masks on and kept them on throughout the evacuation. Members were calling their husbands, wives, sons, daughters, chiefs of staff, and parents. I'm okay, don't worry, and mommy is safe, turn off the news, filled the echoey stairwell as we made our way through the belly of the Capitol. We didn't know exactly where we were headed, and we didn't know if we would encounter more rioters along the way. We were vigilant and stayed together. I kept scanning our group, making sure all the members I was huddled with behind the chairs earlier were still with us. No one could be left behind. Members were helping reporters. Reporters were consoling members. Some were conducting interviews, but everyone was helping each other as we fled the worst of what we would hopefully ever experience in the building. One freshman member jokingly asked if every day in Congress was like this. And a more senior member quipped, "You said you wanted a front row seat." I appreciated the levity in the moment, and I remembered texting our team about it so they knew the tone was lifting. I also realized that some of these people escaping alongside me had only been on the job for 5 days. What a welcome. When we finally made it to our secure location, members started filing through the large wooden doors of the largest hearing room I know of. When I tried to walk in, I was told "members only" by an officer guarding the entrance. I was stunned. The five other reporters with me couldn't believe it either. "Where are we supposed to go?" we begged. Representative Abigail Spanberger of Virginia fought for us. When those doors slammed in our faces, she told the guards we needed refuge, we needed somewhere to hide. She told them that we were in the chamber too, and we had been attacked. At the same time, I was also asking Spanberger if she would please go on MSNBC to talk about what had just happened. She later did and recounted the events calmly and accurately. Spanberger refused to go in the hearing room until she knew we were safe. It meant so much to me that she fought for us. As the confrontation with the guard ensued, Representative Ruben Gallego, who's awesome, offered to take us down the hall to his office. I felt better once we were inside his office. He did not need to help us like that, especially amid a raging pandemic that has killed hundreds of thousands. Gallego entertained us with war stories, raided the cafeteria and vending machines for us, and made us feel calm amidst the chaos that was still ensuing outside the door. We had few resources and had left our laptops, snacks, coffees, and phone chargers behind in the chamber. For several hours, we shared a single phone charger. I joked after the fact it only worked out because we were all women. Gallego and dozens of others made it very clear there was only one option. They had to return to work. He told us they couldn't be intimidated, and he was firm in that the American people must know the insurrectionists did not win that day. I saw a tweet notification for Representative Jason Crow of Colorado popped up on my rapidly dying phone. Quote, "We have stopped the coup attempt and will be returning to the Capitol today to finish the business of the people. We will never back down. We will return." Again, if you're just tuning in, thank you. We're operating on, fumes today because AT&T internet is down. So I'm using my cell phone's mobile hotspot, and I'm reading to you a piece from NBCNews.com written by a producer named Haley Talbot, her first person account of what happened on Wednesday. So it finishes with a section called Back to Work. When I finally returned to the chamber just before 9 p.m. to cover what was supposed to be the story, the counting of the Electoral College votes, I found my laptop where I'd left it in the chaos. My pool note, never sent, was still open on the screen. Where I'd pre-written a general top of the note, I just started writing over it words I could barely string together in actual sentences, like chaos, confusion, and alarm. Of course, there's a lot I didn't see happening outside the Capitol on Wednesday. It was once I watched the coverage on NBC's Today Show the next morning that I understood the full picture. That was the first time I cried. The Capitol is our home. This happened in the People's House. This was an attack that not only harmed the members, staffers, and reporters, but every custodial and food service worker in that building Wednesday afternoon. People died, including a Capitol Police officer. What a dark, dark day. That was written by Haley Talbot, a producer at NBC News. Wow. Wow. And today, Republicans in the House of Representatives stood on that chamber floor and defended Donald Trump and fought for him not to be impeached. Impeaching him is the least we could do today. I don't even want to tell you what the worst is, but what he did and those members who stood up for him were all saying, you know, incited the insurrection that day on his speech. Well, we read his speech. I read his speech, too, and I pulled some highlights out of it, but I'm not going to read them now. But, you know, what they tried to gaslight everyone. And what they were saying was there was, you know, this was planned. This was planned in advance. And so you can't blame it on Donald Trump because, you know, while he was speaking, they were planting those pipe bombs and things. Yeah, you're right. It was planned, and it was all incited by Donald Trump. This man, since the day of the election, since before the election, he knew he was going to lose. And he kept telling you the election was rigged. Well, think back 4 years. In 2016, he did the same thing. Throughout the campaign, he told you the election was going to be rigged, that he would lose because it was going to be stolen from him. And then go figure, he won. Yeah, yeah, we can talk about that too. But you never again heard another word about the election being rigged until the 2020 election. And it was clear he was going to lose. And so he built up this whole thing. The only way I lose is if they steal it from me. It's rigged. It's all fake. It's all phony. Everything's fake. Bullshit.
Bullshit.
Thank you. He has been inciting this action since the day he lost the election. So, you know, the hypocrites, enough. Just enough. I don't want to hear anymore. Donald Trump has been impeached twice. 10 Republicans crossed over and voted with the Democrats. And now it goes to the Senate. The question is when. Mitch McConnell has said he is open to listening to what they present in the Senate hearing, and then we'll decide how he's going to vote. That, yes, there is a chance he would vote for impeachment. He said he believes what Donald Trump did was an impeachable offense. He could be convicted in the Senate. Now, by the time the Senate hears this, Mitch McConnell will not agree to bring the Senate back into session tomorrow or the next day, as he could. Legally, he could, but he won't. Instead, what'll happen is either they will split the action once the new president is installed and go about the Senate business for part of the day, confirming cabinet secretaries and such, and work on impeachment for the other part of the day, or they'll just delay it a few months. It doesn't matter because by that time, Donald Trump will be out of office, but they will have more time to build their case, which they should probably take. And so we'll just have to wait and see what happens. And we probably won't know for a few days. In the meantime, the Capitol is swarming with National Guard. They should have been there last Wednesday. They should have been there a week ago today. The pictures from D.C. are sad. Maybe that's the word I'll use. They're sad because you see camouflage wearing troops surrounding the Capitol, and they're surrounded by this giant fence. I've been to D.C. I've walked right up to the Capitol. I've gone inside the Capitol. I sat in the Senate chamber. I have a feeling everything's going to be different now because Donald fucking Trump is a big fucking baby who doesn't understand the way the Constitution works. doesn't understand how a democracy works, wants to be a dictator, and broke the law on so many occasions. I want to see him rot behind bars for the rest of his life. I'm just done. And with that, I think I'm going to be done. Because I can't, you know, usually I can read the chat room. I can get some feedback or something, but with everything down and, and now it looks like the internet's coming back up. I just don't fucking believe it. Let's see. I wonder if I can plug back in. Hold on. I'm just going to stay on. I'm going to plug the internet back in, and then I will disconnect my phone, my phone link. But it's going to be too late anyway, because most of you are gone by now, right? I'm being the engineer and plugging in the Ethernet. Hold on. I'll be back in a minute. All right, now let's see if the broadband comes back up again. Oh, it's so much fun. I just love doing radio. Like, oh, it says connected. Okay, Ethernet connected. So let's turn off the hotspot and see. We're on the air. How about that? Okay. Hey, now if you want to call in, I can take your calls because, well, we have a decent connection again. This is so frustrating. Unfortunately, you know what? I bet I can play some audio now. So here's what I'll do. I will stay on for the next few minutes and play for you some of the high and the low points from today's hearing. And if you want to call in from today's impeachment hearing, where, again, Donald Trump became the first president to be impeached twice. All right. So I'm not going to play for you any of the Republicans, because some of them were just reprehensible. Jamie Raskin. Let's listen to Jamie Raskin, because he's a hero of all this. And by the way, he was named. He has the role that Adam Schiff had in the first impeachment trial. Jamie Raskin will be the lead manager on the impeachment manager's team. He's taking the lead. Here's a little bit of Jamie Raskin, if it'll work, from the floor today of the House. Here we go.
Smashing windows and beating police officers over the head with fire extinguishers. A bloodthirsty mob attacked the Capitol and invaded this Congress last Wednesday. They erected a gallows and repeatedly chanted, "Hang Mike Pence." They stormed Speaker Pelosi's office yelling, "Where's Nancy?" They brandished the Confederate battle flag and occupied the Senate chamber. They wounded dozens of people, hospitalizing dozens of people, killed five of our people. For 6 hours, they shut down the counting of Electoral College votes, our sacred process under the Constitution for peaceful transfer of power in the United States. They may have been hunting for Pence and Pelosi to stage their coup, but every one of us in this room right now could have died. As Senator Lindsey Graham said, the mob could have blown the building up. They could have killed us all.
Yeah.
And now the far right is calling for return engagement from January 17th to January 20th. They're asking the president to pardon the conspirators in last week's rampage as they prepare for a race war again next week. And it's a bit much to be hearing that these people would not be trying to destroy our government and kill us if we just weren't so mean to them.
If we just weren't so mean to them. Yeah, that's what they were saying. It's astounding. Absolutely astounding. So that was Jamie Raskin today on the House floor. Other impeachment managers this cycle for the second impeachment of Donald Trump, Eric Swalwell, David Cicilline, Ted Lieu. And Ted Lieu, Jamie Raskin, and David Cicilline, the three of them together wrote this article of impeachment. And actually, they got it started while they were in the room, sheltering safely in place, away from the terrorists. Yeah. So let's see. All right. Oh, it looks like my site's back up again. Amazing. Thank you, AT&T. Gee, you're so horrible. All right. I don't know if anyone's there's no rule requiring me to shut down at the end of the hour. OK, I'm back in the chat room. Hi, everyone. I'm in the chat room at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. We're back up and running now. Obviously, I'm not going to start video. We've got just a few minutes left. And I know there's no rule requiring me to shut down at the end of the hour, but this hasn't been a fun hour. I do want to see if I can find. Oh, I know. Hold on. I have a column here of videos that I put to the side that I wanted to play for you. Cori Bush was great. Cori Bush is the new freshman congresswoman from Missouri. She's the one who was, I believe, a homeless single mother who was from Ferguson, who won her seat. And she was given a whopping 30 seconds to speechify today. And here's what Cori Bush said.
Madam Speaker, St. Louis and I rise in support of the article of impeachment against Donald J. Trump. If we fail to remove a white supremacist president who incited a white supremacist insurrection, it's communities like Missouri's 1st District that suffer the most. The 117th Congress must understand that we have a mandate to legislate in defense of black lives. The first step in that process is to root out white supremacy, starting with impeaching the white supremacist in chief.
Yeah.
Thank you, and I yield. Back.
Oh, fuck yeah. That was Cori Bush. And I'll tell you something. The Democrats wrapped up their portion of the testimony with Steny Hoyer, and they let Steny Hoyer go on and on and on. And I tweeted through my crippled Twitter, really? That's the best you could do, Steny Hoyer? Shit. Put Cori Bush back up there because she was great. You know, 30 seconds really is not enough. Let's see which other ones I pulled for you. Steve Cohen from Tennessee. He was really good. And the cretins on the other side of the aisle tried to shout him down. Let's hear what Steve Cohen of Tennessee said. Here we go.
This Capitol next week. He has not asked them not to do it. He has not told them to stand down. I most fear January 20, because I think he will try to go out with a bang and take attention away from Joe Biden.
The gentleman's time has expired. Ooh. And there will be order in the House.
Okay, well, actually, today, guess what? The Trump White House did release a statement. Can I find it? Did I keep it here? I thought I did. That's not it. Oh, here it is. Okay. So the White House released a statement ostensibly from Donald Trump. One paragraph statement. And it says, quote, in light of reports of more demonstrations. Okay, sorry. In light of reports of more demonstrations, I urge that there must be no violence, no lawbreaking, and no vandalism of any kind. That is not what I stand for and is not what America stands for. I call on all Americans to help ease tensions and calm tempers. Thank you. So that was a statement put out on White House letterhead. Why didn't he tweet it out? Oh, right. Wait. Yeah. He can't put it on Facebook, can't put it on Twitter, can't put it on Instagram, can't put it on YouTube. Oh, poor Don. Poor Don. He can't put it anywhere. But you know what? He can go into the briefing room and talk to the press. He can give an actual press conference about his complicity in this raid, in this siege of the Capitol. But he won't because he's chicken shit. Chicken shit. Like the idiots who, quit rather than stand up and, and invoke the 25th Amendment. It's unreal. Jason Crow was one of the impeachment managers in the first impeachment. He was a hero, apparently, last Wednesday, helping a number of his colleagues, he being, a veteran and used to combat. And here's what he said on the floor today.
Madam Speaker, last week I stood in that gallery to defend this chamber against a violent mob called here by Donald Trump. I have dedicated my life to the defense of our nation, and Donald Trump is a risk to all that I love. Some of my Republican colleagues are afraid of the consequences of an impeachment vote, but this Congress sends our young men and women to war every day. I'm not asking you to storm the beaches of Normandy, but only show a fraction of the courage we ask of our troops every day. Leadership is hard. It's time to impeach.
It is time to impeach. So that was Congressman Crow of Colorado. Here is Seth Moulton. I'm not always the biggest Seth Moulton fan, but he was good today. Seth Moulton of Massachusetts.
Madam Speaker, there are more troops right now in Washington, D.C. than in Afghanistan. And they are here to defend us against the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, and his mob. I would ask my colleagues to look at the faces of those young Americans defending democracy, defending us, and find an ounce of their courage.
So that was Seth Moulton. I think we need to hear from Maxine Waters, don't we?
Madam Speaker, I rise in support of impeaching again the worst president in the history of the United States. Since his first day in office, this president has spent 4 years abusing his power, lying, embracing authoritarianism, radicalizing his supporters against democracy. This corruption poisoned the minds of his supporters, inciting them to willingly join with white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and paramilitary extremists in a siege of the United States Capitol building, the very seat of American democracy. The Republican Party is now the Trump Party.
Ooh.
And I want you to know that this is a Trump power grab that will not stop. It will not stop with attacking the Capitol and our state legislatures. This president intends to exercise power long after he is out of office. It is reported that the President of the United States watched the invasion from the Oval Office of our Capitol and seemingly enjoyed it. I want you to know we should be concerned that the Republicans will not defend him, and he is capable of starting a civil war. He must be impeached. He must be stopped now.
You go, Maxine Waters. Oh, yeah. Jim McGovern of Massachusetts was the Rules Committee chair. He got to, you know, say who for the first part of it anyway, until Gerald Nadler took over, was doling out the speaking times. Here's Jim McGovern going after Jim Jordan,
who acknowledges that we all acknowledge that Donald Trump was the president the day after the election. Hillary Clinton conceded the day after the election. None of us push conspiracy theories like some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have been doing, and this president, that somehow the president won in a landslide. Give me a break. You know, yesterday in the Rules Committee, I asked the gentleman from Ohio if he would just say five simple words. And he was talking about healing.
Yeah.
These are the five simple words that you could say that would help heal this nation, that the election was not stolen. That's it. Five simple words. He refused. He said he never said the election was stolen. Well, the evidence shows otherwise. And let me quote from this Dana Milbank piece entitled Five Pesky Little Words Keep Stumping Jim Jordan. And I, Mr. Speaker, the bottom line is this. This Capitol was stormed. People died because of the big lies that were being told by this president and by too many people on the other side of the aisle. Enough. People should be outraged as to what happened. It was unforgivable.
Yeah.
Unconscionable.
Yeah.
And coming up on this floor and talking about whataboutism and trying to make these false equivalencies, give me a break. The President of the United States instigated an attempted coup in this country. People died.
Yep.
Everybody should be outraged, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. If this is not an impeachable offense, I don't know what the hell is. This president is not fit to remain in office.
You go. Jim McGovern of Massachusetts. This is David Cicilline. He's one of the managers, one of the impeachment managers this time out, and one of the authors of this article of impeachment.
220 years since George Washington yielded the presidency to John Adams, the peaceful transfer of power has been a hallmark of our democracy. In this country, the will of the American people reigns supreme over the ambitions of any individual. Every single president has honored and upheld these principles until now. Donald Trump lost his bid for re-election last November. It was a free and fair election. In fact, President Trump's own election security director called it the most secure election in U.S. history. But for 2 months now, Donald Trump has refused to accept the will of the American people. Over and over again, he's told his supporters he didn't really lose. The election was stolen from him and from them.
Right.
And as they grew angrier and angrier over this perceived injustice, he told them there was still a way to keep him in power. So as Congress prepared to meet for the sacred ritual of certifying the results of the presidential election, the president made his move. He directed his supporters to travel to Washington for a rally to stop the steal. They did. He then, once assembled, he had one final request. March on the U.S. Capitol. Do what it takes to help me hold on to power. We will never give up. We will never concede, he told them. If you don't fight like hell, he warned, you're not going to have a country anymore. The people on the ellipse that day heard his message loud and clear. They answered his call for insurrection. As the third ranking Republican in this chamber put it, he summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack.
Yeah, Liz Cheney said that. Thank you, David Cicilline. All right, I'm going to give you one more, and then I'm going to sign off. This is what I tried to play earlier, but the audio I had was so noisy. This is clean, and it's how the whole debate began today with Nancy Pelosi. Take it away, Speaker.
The President of the United States incited this insurrection, this armed rebellion against our common country. He must go. He is a clear and present danger to the nation that we all love. Since the presidential election in November, an election the president lost, he has repeatedly lied about the outcome, sowed self-serving doubt about democracy, and unconstitutionally sought to influence state officials to repeal reality. And then came that day of fire we all experienced. The president must be impeached, and I believe the president must be convicted by the Senate, a constitutional remedy that will ensure that the republic will be safe from this man who was so resolutely determined to tear down the things that we hold dear and that hold us together. It gives me no pleasure to say this. It breaks my heart. It should break your heart. Should break all of our hearts, for your presence in this hallowed chamber is testament to your love for our country, for America, and to your faith in the work of our founders to create a more perfect union.
And with that, I think we're done for the day. The bottom line is, Donald Trump is the impotus again. He's the two-time impeached impetus. Oh, God. And a special extra fuck you to AT&T. All right. Well, I'll be back tomorrow. What a letdown this was, huh? All right. Well, I'll still podcast it out just to show you I was here. I was working. I tried. Thanks for bearing with me, those of you who did. And to everyone else, I will see you tomorrow. Take care, everyone. Bye.